All right, good morning, everybody. So, it is my great pleasure to be here. I am humbled to be with you. I'm also, of course, a little bit nervous, you know, doing this sort of thing in a setting that I'm not totally used to. But as I look out, I see a lot of familiar faces, a lot of friends and family. So thank you all for being here. And it's I'm just so excited to be here with you and help you walk through this journey with these parables that Pete's been telling me about that you've been doing. So again, thank you to Pete for inviting me to come do your job for you today. I told Pete in the first service that later this fall, I'm probably going to ask him to come teach my classes for a day so that I can actually have a day to sit back and relax. So Pete agreed to take me up on that, so I'm going to hold him to it. And I will try to keep my teacher instincts at bay a bit, but if I see Pastor Mike on his phone, I might have to scold him a bit. So it'll be nice to not have to deal with ruley kids for once and actually be able to hopefully address a mature audience. We'll see. But all right, so today we are going to be looking at the parable, the lost coin, actually. Now, the parable of the lost coin is what we're going to be looking at today. So this parable isn't quite as popular as maybe the prodigal son or the good Samaritan. It's a rather short parable, but there's a lot packed into it. Right? There is so much there for us to delve into and see how it relates to our lives, what we can learn from it. So we're going to be doing that together today. So to set the scene a bit, you have Jesus, and he is sitting and eating with people who were considered the sinners. All right, these are the outcasts, the people who are shunned by society, the people you're not supposed to associate with. These are, you know, considered the prostitutes, the tax collectors. So the Pharisees and the scribes come along. Now, these are Jesus' opponents, all right? So they come along. They see this happening. They see Jesus, who is this religious teacher, eating and associating with these sinners, and they say, this fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. So understand, for the Pharisees and the scribes, it is taboo to be around these people, right? You do not associate with these people. In fact, they had some religious laws that would prevent them even from coming into contact with some of these people because they were considered unclean. So they see Jesus with these, what you might call, undesirable people, and they call him out for it. They say, what are you doing hanging around with these people? In response to that, Jesus tells a series of parables, one of which is the parable of the lost coin that we're looking at today. So if you have your Bibles with you and you would like to follow along, you can turn to Luke chapter 15, verses 8 through 10. I don't know what versions you might have, but I'll be reading from the NRSV translation, New Revised Standard Version. All right. So in response to this accusation that Jesus is being around people he's not supposed to be around, here's what Jesus says. He says, or what woman, having 10 coins, if she loses one, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it. When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost. Just so, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one repentant sinner. This is the word of the Lord, and this is our reading for today. So, the parable of the lost coin. This is, in essence, Jesus' answer to the Pharisees saying, what are you doing hanging around with these undesirable people? Well, what Jesus is saying by using this parable, he's saying is, I'm doing exactly what I was called to do and exactly what each of us should be doing too. He's saying, I am finding the lost people. I am finding the people who are hurting. I am finding the people who have been shunned from society, the people who have been neglected, the people who have been ignored. I am finding the lost. I'm bringing hope to the hopeless. Now, for many of us who have spent years in churches, we've probably heard over and over and over again that we are supposed to share our faith with others in the world, to be a light to the world, to offer hope to people out in the world. But for so many of us, we just don't know how to do it. You know, we know we're supposed to, but how? What does it actually take? I mean, when I was growing up down at Damascus, I thought sharing my faith meant inviting people to church, right? Because if you just get them into the building, then the pastor and the Holy Spirit will do the rest. You know, that was my idea of sharing my faith, right? We get so wrapped up in our programs, in our small groups, in creating a seeker-friendly Sunday morning experience that we sometimes forget the basic fundamental aspects of what it means to share our faith, our hope, and our love with the world. This parable of the lost coin gives us a paradigm, or kind of a roadmap, if you will, of how to share that faith with others in the world, particularly with the lost, with the hurting, with the disadvantaged people. So let's look at this a little bit more closely and see exactly how it does that. So it starts with this woman. She has 10 coins, right? Or at least she thinks she should have 10 coins, but when she checks, she sees that she only has 9, right? So she decides to try to find the lost coin. Right away, we learn something about what it means to share our faith and our hope with the world. She has 10 coins, or so she thinks, but she only sees 9. There's a problem. She identifies a problem. There should be 10 coins. There's only 9. Something doesn't add up. She sees how it should be. There should be 10 coins, but there's only 9. One is missing. She is identifying a problem, much like we identify problems when we look around at the world. She sees that something is amiss. But here's the thing. She wouldn't have known that anything was wrong unless she knew that she was supposed to have 10 coins. Me, if I check my bank account, I will never have any idea if it's the way it's supposed to be, because I don't know how much exactly I'm supposed to have in there, so when I check, just whatever is in there is in there. But she knows she's supposed to have 10. And when there's only 9, she knows there's a problem. We can only identify something as wrong if we have an idea of what it means to be right. There should be 10, but there's only 9. Likewise, we can identify hate is wrong because we have the idea of love, of what it should be. We can identify violence is wrong because we have the idea of peace, what it should be. We can identify discrimination as wrong because we have the idea of equality, what it should be. Right? So she starts by identifying the problem. Such a simple thing, but so packed, so loaded. And that's our first step of being a witness in the world, a witness of hope, is looking around and seeing something's not right. Something's amiss. We have this idea of perfection, this idea of, you know, what it means for people to live in community, live in love, and that's not what's happening. Now, I'm the type who is really good at identifying problems, especially in the church. I can go in and say, you know, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. I am terrible at taking the next steps and finding out what to do about it, right? Which is why I'm really glad the parable doesn't end here, right? It actually goes on to show us a way of addressing those problems. So once she has identified the problem, there are three things that this woman does to find her lost coin. The first thing, she lights a lamp. Then she sweeps the house. And then she searches carefully. I suggest to you this morning that these are the three ingredients, if you will, to sharing our faith, sharing our hope with the world. Lighting a lamp, sweeping the house, searching carefully. So why do I say those are the three ingredients? Well, let's look at each one individually. The first one, light a lamp. So once she's identified the problem, she sees she's missing a coin. She needs to find it. The first thing she does then is lights a lamp. Why? so she can see. If she's stumbling around in the dark, you know, she might injure herself. She might cause damage to the things in her house, and her chances of finding the coin are slim to none, right? She needs a light so that she can see around her, so that everything can be illumined. She can see clearly and know where she's going to find that coin. Light, fire, this sort of imagery is commonly used as an image for faith. Kind of the fire of faith, the flame of faith. So this first step that she takes is lighting this fire of faith, this light by which everything else becomes clear, by which you can see everything else. Just a few days ago, Pope Francis had this quote. Can we get that up? Thank you. So just a couple days ago, Pope Francis said, "There is an urgent need to see once again that faith is a light. For once the light of faith dies out, all other lights begin to dim." It's the sense that faith doesn't just change us inwardly, but it affects the way we see everything, everything. And when that light begins to grow dim, everything else does too. So the light of faith exposes everything in the house, right? By the light of faith, she can see and go on her journey to find the coin. Likewise, once we've identified the problems in the world, the light of faith reveals it all. The shadows try to hide from the light. They dance away. They flee. The light reveals everything. By the light of faith, we can see all the injustices occurring in the world. Right? We see the poverty. We see the addiction. Right? We see the ways that a society contributes to disadvantaged people remaining disadvantaged. Right? That is what the light of faith does. It reveals. It illuminates. It shows us things that maybe we really didn't want to see. But now that we've seen it, we have to do something about it. One of my favorite images, if we can get that next image up, is from the Catechism of the Catholic Church that I'll get to in just a second. I actually didn't know until this morning when Andy told me that last night was a full moon. So this works out pretty well. But in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it says, "The church has no other light than Christ. The church is like the moon, all its light reflected from the sun." So in the scriptures, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." But elsewhere, he says, "You are the light of the world." So which one is it, Jesus? You know, as it usually is with Jesus, it's a both and, right? Jesus is the source of that light, but we bear that light forth to the world, much like the moon reflects the sun. When we go out and look at the full moon, we know the sun is there, not because we see it directly, but because we see it reflected on the moon. Likewise, the world knows that Christ is there, not because they see him directly, but because they see him reflected by those who are doing exactly this, right? It's that light of faith, bringing that light into the world that reveals all the injustice, all the things that we need to address. But when this woman who's looking for her coin, when she lights that lamp, she sees something she doesn't like very much. Which brings us to our next point. When she lights her lamp, she notices that her house is a mess. There's dust where she didn't know there was dust before. There is clutter everywhere. There is mud on the walls. She doesn't even know how it got this dirty, but now that the light's on, she can see it all. And she says to herself, "Well, I'm never going to find the coin with the house in this order." So she sweeps the house. She starts cleaning. Right? Because much as the light of faith illuminates all the injustice around us, it also shows us the dirt in our own lives. Or the dirt in the home, if you will. Right. Once that light comes up, there are so many things that you see about the way we individually contribute to injustice in our society, or the way that we individually are not living into the call that we've received as part of the church, and we know we have to do something about it. That's when we have to get the broom out. Now, I'm not saying that we need to be perfect before we go out and share our hope and our faith. If that were the case, none of us would be out sharing our hope and faith, right? Because this is never done. There's always something else to sweep. But the thing about this is, the dimmer the light of faith, the harder it is to see that dirt. You know, all the things that we've let creep into our lives that just part of our daily routine now. We don't even think about it anymore. But once that light of faith starts to grow, we can't ignore some of that dirt anymore. We can't ignore it. We have to start sweeping. So to return to our image of the moon reflecting the sun, reflecting the light of the sun. Can we get the next picture up? This is a picture of a dirty mirror. So a mirror covered in dirt is not able to reflect very well, is it? Right? If a mirror has this grime on it, it's going to be hard to reflect. And I can tell you what, I have a lot of grime in my life. I have a lot of dirt that prevents me from reflecting the love of Christ, that prevents me from bringing that light and that hope into the world. Because, as you know, if my life is like this window, I'll clean part of it and then clean more and clean more, and then, oh, this is getting dirty again. I'll clean over here, and then it's getting dirty. It's always getting more dirty. It's always in need of cleaning. All right. So once she identifies the problem, she lights a lamp. After that, she cleans the house. Right. Now, for a lot of Christians, a lot of people in churches, this is where they think it stops, right? You have faith and you clean up your life, right? I've been in church a long time and I've seen a lot of Christians who say that's the Christian life. But our parable doesn't end here. It doesn't end here. She lit the light of faith for a reason. She cleaned the house for a reason, so that she can find the coin. So the next part, she searches carefully for that coin. So once we have that faith kindled in us, once we've begun the process of cleaning the house, that's when it's time to do exactly what Jesus was doing when the Pharisees were questioning him. That's the time to go out, to find those who are lost, to find those who are in the most need, to find those who society has pushed away, and to say, you are loved. Jesus didn't stand on a street corner and preach hellfire and brimstone. He went and sat with the people labeled sinners. He went and ate with the people who were the undesirables, knowing full well that the religious authorities would ridicule him for it, right? Make no mistake, when we do this, we will be ridiculed. We will be. But that's part of what it means to follow Christ. This is our witness. This is bringing the light of Christ to the world. This is how we are that reflection of the sun from the moon, by going out and serving, giving of ourselves, never, never giving up, always looking for those who are in need and helping. That is what we are called to do. Now, with these three things, lighting the lamp, sweeping the house, and searching carefully, they don't always happen in that order. And the reason why is because they're never done, right? They're never done. Faith, like a fire, needs kindling. It can grow very dim and it can be put out. I've seen it. Part of that kindling is what we do coming to church together on Sundays, to kindle that faith, make sure it doesn't die out. And that faith, when it gets burning bright, that's when we can see more, to go out and serve. That's when we can see more. But God forbid I ever think I'm done serving. You know, God forbid I say, all right, I've met my quota of serving 10 people this year, so now I'm going to sit back and relax. That's not how it works. That's not how it works, right? And I'll never be done cleaning house. But they all work together. The more I clean house, the more I am eager to get out and serve. And the more I serve, the more it fuels up my flame of faith. They all work together. It's more like a circular sort of thing than it is these steps, right? They all work together. But the parable still doesn't end there. It doesn't end with her finding the coin. Sure, she finds it, and she's happy about it, but then she does something else. Once she's found the coin, the parable says, she calls together her friends and her neighbors, and she says, "Rejoice with me." Right? This reminds us that we are always part of a community. None of these steps are done alone. Right? We don't kindle the fire of faith alone. We do it in a community. We don't clean up our lives alone. We do it in a community, and we don't go out and serve alone. We do it in a community. And then at the end of it, once we see that somebody has been served, once we see that their lives have been changed, once we see that hope has come into someone's life who had no hope before, we rejoice together as a community, because it's never an individual effort. It's never an individual effort. It's always part of a wider community. That's what the church is. It's a community built on Christ to reflect his light to the world, to serve others. And here I was, you know, as a child in Damascus, thinking sharing my faith meant inviting people to church. Not a bad thing by any means. It's good to have programs. It's good to all that thing. But the Great Commission in Matthew 28, it doesn't say, bring therefore all ye peoples to your potluck dinners and your programs. It says, go, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. So remember, this is Jesus' answer to ridicule. People who were saying, you shouldn't be hanging around with these undesirable people. And this is the answer Jesus gives. So much to unpack in it. So much there for us. Can we go to the next slide, please? All right. When we think of what kinds of people are in the most need, regardless of where we live, we don't have to look far. But we do have to search carefully. We do have to search carefully, like the woman looking for her lost coin. I tell you, where I live up near Cleveland, I can walk right outside of my apartment, and these are some of the things I'll see just right around the corner. Poverty, homelessness, joblessness, addiction. I mean, you name it. People who are suffering. People who need hope. People who need to be loved where they are, just like Jesus was, just like Jesus did, just like he modeled for us. That is our mission. That is how we share our faith with others. Not by standing on the corner preaching hellfire and brimstone, but by sitting with them, being there, being a friend, when everybody else has turned their backs. That is what it means. All right. Can we go to the next slide, please? All right. So Pete tells me that at the end of your messages, you like to have a little reflection time or so. So I'd like to invite us to do that. So considering these three things, lighting the lamp, sweeping the house, searching carefully, take a moment to think, what are you best at? Maybe you're best at lighting the lamp. Maybe faith has never been a challenge for you. Maybe you've just always had a faith life. But maybe on the other hand, you've never really been one to go out and try to serve people. Or maybe on the other hand, you are the type who is a social activist, always out serving the poor, doing what you can for the needy, but maybe there are some things in your personal life that are really getting in the way of you reflecting the light of Christ to the world, right? So take a moment. Consider these three things. Think, where are you best? And when you identify that, give thanks to God for it. Then consider, where are you worst? And when you identify that, give thanks to God for helping you identify it, and then ask for help. And then think of one concrete way, one concrete thing you can do this week to improve whichever of these needs improvement. Because I know how it goes. I've sat in many pews and I've listened to many sermons, and you know, you go home after this and you have dinner, and then you go through your week, and then you come back and with absolutely no recollection of what had happened last week, right? But the idea isn't just to come hear a motivational speaker on a Sunday morning. The idea is to gather so that we can be sent out to search for the lost coin. And with that, I will give you some time.